All right, rev up those fryers and polish your durian, because it's time for another episode of Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities, whether you like it or not. What pops into your head when you think trains in China? You think of something like this, right? A bulletin from a sleek yet somewhat scary future, just like the rest of China, right? Maybe you've heard about the maglev they have in Shanghai that hovers above its track with magnets and goes 268 miles an hour. Or the system of conventional trains that go 200 miles an hour on their own dedicated track, on a network almost as big as the US interstate highway system, all built since 2007. How, in a country the size of the lower 48 United States, no two major cities are more than 8 hours apart by train. Knowing all that, would you believe that China was also the last place on Earth to regularly use steam trains? That even though I'm just 23, there were new steam engines being built in China in my lifetime? Welcome to another episode of the show within the show, Tor in China, featuring Thimble the Doll, making an appearance alongside my regular co-host Jollibee the Durian, by popular demand. Arguably the biggest thing I want in life, that I know I will never get, is to go to China in the 1980s. To experience China before the world burst in, when it truly was a different place. When it was so much poorer and arguably more chaotic, or at least chaotic in different ways. When it felt like a step into the past instead of a step into the future. And they still used steam trains. Steam trains aren't in use anywhere in the Western world as anything other than tourist attractions. Museums and historic railroads still run them for entertainment and nostalgia, but they aren't seriously used to get things from point A to point B. Western countries started to replace them with diesel and electric engines in the 1940s, and the 50s were when the phase-out really began. The last new mainline steam locomotive in the United States was built in 1953. 1960 was the last year any major railroads in the US used steam engines, while the last British rail service to use a steam engine ran in 1968. France ran their last steam train in 1975, Germany in 1977, and the USSR in 1985. Although that train was out in Siberia, while almost all the trains in the relatively densely populated European side of Russia had been electric since the 1960s. The last holdout in America, a steel mill in Illinois, which only used steam engines to shuttle ingots around within the factory, got rid of its steamers in 1981. A minor branch line also in Illinois sometimes used a steam engine to haul short-distance freight trains until 1986, although by that point, they were only keeping it around because they used to have a side hustle running tourist excursions, and they didn't want to let that engine go unused. Steam engines weren't replaced in favor of more powerful engines. In fact, by horsepower, most of the strongest locomotives ever built are still steam engines. Diesel and electric engines are just cheaper to maintain, with fewer moving parts. They don't produce nearly as much choking black smoke, and they're modular. You can control multiple diesel or electric engines with one crew. One big boy steam engine, an American steamer built in the 1940s during the Western world's last era of designing new steam engines, can pull a whole mile-long freight train on its own, which a diesel engine almost definitely can't do. But for the same amount of labor and fuel, you can swap it out for 5 cleaner, easier to maintain diesels. And if that train is going through mountains and needs to add another engine to get over the pass, it's so much easier to add one more diesel engine to a train. Adding another whole steam engine would be overkill, and require a second crew of its own. And then there's China, where steam engines ruled the roost the whole way through the 80s. They were finally no longer the norm by the 1990s, no longer being produced by the 2000s, no longer pulling passenger trains by the 2010s, and finally, in the 2020s, no longer pulling freight trains anywhere, as far as we know. It's not a mystery why China kept their steam engines for so long. China was a very poor country, poorer than most of sub-Saharan Africa in the 1980s, but it had an unusually developed rail system for such a poor country. In the 90s and 2000s, as China strung electric wires over its major rail lines and trains between big cities replaced their steam engines with electrics, they were still building small steam engines to haul rural freight trains, to the extent that some tourist railroads in the United States commissioned newly built steam engines from China, since all the steam engines in the US are expensive historic pieces, and China was the only place you could still get them new. The leap from steam trains to high-speed trains might be the best microcosm of how fast China has grown in the past half century or so. All the before and after photos in the world don't say as much as how, when I was living in Beijing, I once had an assignment to go ask old people doing Tai Chi in a park in the morning questions about their life, and I decided to ask when they'd last ridden on a train pulled by a steam engine. Most of them answered 2008 or 2009, the same year some of the first high-speed rail lines opened. China's rail system went from half a century behind America to half a century ahead in just a few years. The Chinese government doesn't exactly like to publicize their steam engines. It doesn't fit the narrative of China they want to promote. At the huge National Railroad Museum outside Beijing, there are lots of steam engines, but none built past the 1960s. Something of a cat-and-mouse game occurred throughout the 2000s and 2010s in rural China, where a rural branch line that still used steam engines in regular service would get discovered by the Western internet, rail fans from abroad would start arriving to take photos of the train, and then the government would coincidentally allocate some funds for the expedited modernization of the line, and before most rail fans could book a flight, the steam engine would be gone. Which means the question, when did the last steam train in China get retired, has no clear answer. Some people think they're already gone forever. Others insist there are probably still working steam engines serving some coal mines, steel mills, or coal-fired power plants, places where there's already a big enough supply of coal that it's trivial to save some to fuel a steam engine. They're literally like a wild animal species on the brink of extinction. There's a last recorded sighting on the books, but we don't know if there might be a few still out there. The last place it was confirmed, wild steam trains, as it were in regular service in China, was at a coal mine in Xinjiang, the dry, sparsely populated, heavily Muslim province in the country's northwest. There, at a mine called Sandaoling, a fleet of 20 huge steam engines carried coal from the mine itself to a nearby rail yard, where the coal cars would be hooked to electric-powered freight trains that took the coal to power plants in the rest of China. In 2022, Railfan and Railroad magazine reported that steam operation at Sandaoling had ended for good, the last well-known, well-documented industrial use of steam trains in the world. Now, some of the world's last steam-powered cranes would be pressed into service to dismantle the tracks the steam trains used to use, which presumably would draw a different, much smaller bunch of autists to the area. By the time I was in China, in fall 2023, the historical window to see steam trains seemed to have closed. But nobody can be sure. So, I went to Baotou, an industrial city in Inner Mongolia, which is a province of China, not Mongolia. Chinese people were baffled when I said I was going to Baotou, as if a Chinese student in America had enthusiastically told you he wanted to go to Gary, Indiana. The BBC once described Baotou with a phrase you very rarely hear in a non-partisan news article by a major, respected publication. Quote, "the worst place on earth." The thing I really wanted to see in Baotou was this. That's called slag, the red-hot byproduct of steelmaking. The steelworks there, one of the largest in the world, just dumps it out in the open, and they use a steam engine to do it. Did this still happen? Nobody seemed to know. I had to go to Bauto and find out. I was not successful in finding any steam engines in Bauto. I asked people if they knew where I could find a Zhongqi Huacha, and nobody knew, but I really wanted to watch the slag dump, and that I didn't really know how to ask people that. Slag is such an obscure word, I'm not even sure I would trust translation apps to translate it correctly. The cherry on top is that a lot of people in that area speak Mongolian as their native language, and their Mandarin isn't much better than mine. I showed that video to the receptionists at my hotel, and they said that doesn't happen in Bauto anymore, although they might have also been saying that they weren't aware that ever happened in Bauto, which could mean it still does. I looked around the steelworks on Google Maps, and while I found a few places that look like the one in the video, none of them seemed to be publicly accessible. It's possible it never was, and the person who shot that video had special permission to go inside the steel mill complex. And the week before I went to Bauto, I'd told another student in my American Study Abroad program that I was going to Bauto, and she was like, "Ooh, can I come? I'd love to explore the traditional Mongolian culture in that area." Since neither of our Chinese was great, we didn't ever split up while we were there, and she wasn't that interested in creeping around outside active steel mills doing Chinese industrial archaeology. One of the 2 days we spent in Bauto was spent going out to a Tibetan Buddhist monastery a few hours taxi ride away, which I have to admit was an objectively nicer place. Either way, I concluded that I never had much of an opportunity to see steam trains in China. I showed up just a few years too late. But then, in February 2024, at which point I was already back in Oregon, Trains Magazine reported that the Sandaoling coal mine steam operations had just closed a second time. Their article came complete with plenty of photos taken in January 2024, showing that rumors of the Sandaoling steam engine's death had been not greatly exaggerated, but exaggerated by a couple of years. Yes, part of the mine had closed in 2022 and had its tracks pulled up, but while I was in China, the steam trains were still puffing away in Xinjiang. Now, Trains Magazine insisted, they were gone for good. The railroad was bringing in lightweight diesel engines to replace them, and they showed a picture of a worker putting a placard that said, "Farewell Steam," on the front of one of the engines. This really seems to be the end of the line for Chinese steam, but I'm anxiously awaiting the next newsflash that last time was a false alarm, and this time the Sandaoling mine really is getting rid of its steam engines for good. Or that there's another steam operation somewhere in China that nobody has heard of before. One thing I could do that would feel like experiencing China in the 80s was to ride a Lupi Huacha. What's a Lupi Huacha? Let's go over to Pastor and let him explain. This man shares almost 3/4 of my cells.
These are the trains that built China. The Lupi Huachas. The classic Mao-era sleeper trains that still crisscross China. Lupi Huacha means green-skinned train, which, like, you know, reasonable. The trains are green. But, like, I really don't want to think about trains as something that has skin.
Stacked on the upper bunk, we got sheets, we got pillows. It's, at least temporarily, a place to put some luggage, although someone's probably going to be joining us in the upper bunk a few stops on. I'm sleeping in the lower bunk. Not that bad. The one real issue with traveling on these trains is that there's very, very little luggage space, and considering that this is most of my worldly possessions, I'm taking this in the process of moving back to Oregon from Beijing. Yeah, it's a bit of a mess. I do have enough space to lie down on this bunk. I've tested it out, but if you're over 6 feet, I don't know. You'd have to work out something else. Complimentary copies of the Workers' Daily are distributed throughout the train. Here, it seems they are covering Xi Jinping's historic meeting with Walter White.
Butter Christmas.
We've started moving so smoothly, so comfortably, that I could only tell we had started to move from the shadows moving across the compartment at first. I'm gonna get a good night's sleep. Heading out of the Beijing West Station. Yes, that's the station. Now, isn't that an impressive building? I'm awake. It's morning. Time for a tour of the train.
So, on some but not all of the long-distance spooky watches, they have a really nice dining car. It's basically a full-service restaurant on board. They've got a kitchen with chefs who wear chef hats, which, like, chefs do in China. Pretty sure in America they don't really do that because we are concerned about rats hiding under our chef's hats, but, like, in China they have a mentality that, like, yeah, if there's a rat under there helping you out, like, maybe the rat's good at cooking.
Yeah, menu's good, menu's affordable.
It's good stuff.
And here's my breakfast, something called white oil chicken. It's probably good. So I'm going from Beijing to Chongqing. You might say I'm on the Chongqing Express. Although, this train isn't really an express, it takes 24 hours to get from Beijing in the northeast to Chongqing in the south-central area of China. The fastest trains on this route take 6 hours. This train's number is T9. K for Kwai, fast. T for Tubie Kwai, especially fast. And Z for Zui Kwai, fastest, although that really means they're the fastest non-high-speed trains in China. Some of the Z-class trains look like high-speed trains from the outside and travel on high-speed tracks for some of their distance, but have sleeper bunks on them. And then there's a whole other class of trains that are fully high-speed and are sleepers that, as far as I know, only go from Beijing to Shenzhen near Hong Kong. I'm in soft sleeper, which is one of the two classes of sleeper trains. We've got a bathroom here which doesn't have a sink, and then the sinks are over here. On the soft sleeper compartments are these little rooms along here. This is mine. We got four bunks to a room, so you have at least three other roommates. Hopefully they don't snore. There aren't a lot of outlets. There's just three per car, I think, and they're out in the hall because these trains were designed before everyone had phones. Hi, Winnie the Pooh. There's only one soft sleeper coach on the train, and most of the cars on the train are made up of hard sleeper, which is this other class that has three tiers of beds and no lockable door. I've traveled in hard sleeper before. It's not that bad. So we're in Chongqing, and this is one of my favorite little details. The train is boarding from a platform on the opposite side of the train than the side that was facing the passengers when it left Beijing. So the destination plates in Beijing said Beijing to Chongqing, and now on the other side of the train, the destination plates say Chongqing to Beijing.
China isn't just building new high-speed rail lines. They're building new slow lines too, especially in parts of the country that are too rugged and isolated to have had railroads before. And they really spare no expense at connecting these remote areas. If the reason this little village doesn't have a rail link is because building one would require a bridge higher than the Eiffel Tower, by golly, they're gonna build that bridge. As part of my same trip down into mountainous southwest China that started with the Lupi Huacha from Beijing to Chongqing, I rode a train on the Liupanshui to Hongguo line in Guizhou, which I had to discover myself. You won't exactly see it in a Lonely Planet guide to the most beautiful train rides in the world, but it sure can compete with any train line you would see on that list, both in terms of the natural environment and the amazing design of the track itself, which loops over itself several times to get through the mountains. There's no way I was the first Westerner to ride a train on that line, but I might have been the only Westerner to ride it in the whole year of 2023.
So now I'm truly going off the beaten path, taking a train from Liupanshui down to Hongguo in the southern state of Guizhou. Look at that. 6081 is this train's number. Not even a letter in front of the train number.
That's how loopy this watcher gets.
On my way out of Liupanshui, on my way to Hongguo, which isn't really a destination. I'm riding this train so that I can cross one of the world's highest bridges. Train 6081, the morning train from Liupanshui to Hongguo. And it's pretty much how trains in China have always been, since there were trains in China. Only a few things about the train have changed. We are being pulled by an electric engine. People's luggage consists of buckets and baskets. And the train stops every 5 minutes or so in tiny little places. But the track is new. This route was only completed in the 2000s. And the reason I'm riding this train, as opposed to the hundreds like it in rural China, is because this route includes one of the highest bridges in the world. In fact, it was for a few years after its completion the highest railroad bridge in the entire world. Although I learned Mandarin in Beijing, and so these people's accents are rather unintelligible to me, I'm pretty sure, as best I could tell, nobody that I talked to, either in Liupanshui or on this specific train, knew that this train line has one of the world's highest bridges, because for them it's a rural lifeline. No more, no less. On the other side of this gorge, above the highway, you can see the train line where it loops around. Well, okay, now you can see the bridge. Here we're crossing over the bridge again, because the railroad spirals over itself to gain elevation. This is one of a few different places where this happens along this track. One thing I've noticed about this train that's like kind of interesting is that it swanks its horn pretty often. Like, this is what almost the whole ride has been like. It swanks its horn almost as often as an American train does, and American trains are definitely an outlier in terms of how much they use their horn, because America has a lot of level crossings, you know, where roads cross the railroad at grade, and they have a rule that they have to sound their horn 4 times before every grade crossing, except in cities and neighborhoods that have a quiet zone, as it's called, and not a lot of places do. In most other places, trains don't use their horns as often, mostly because there aren't as many level crossings or grade crossings in other places, and even when they do, they don't necessarily have such a tightly regulated rail system. I've never been on another Chinese train that does this, and most perplexingly, it uses its horn constantly when it is in a tunnel. I don't know why that is. What is it warning that is in a tunnel?
Down there's the same line that I'm traveling on. We'll be there in a few minutes. This is another one of those spirals.
Thanks for exploring a less often seen part of China with me, Jollibee, and Thimble, and stay on the edge of your seat for more Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities.